Next up is submerged aquatic vegetation criterion.
That's correct.
Thank you, sir.
This, I think, will be a little bit longer discussion, depending on how many questions and what all, how far we get into the details of all of this. But this, as you recall, last year, the commission directed that we establish a work group within the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee to take a look at our policies related to how we deal with SAV. And it essentially was, what is a submerged aquatic vegetation bed? What should count as submerged aquatic vegetation as we're reviewing permit applications? And importantly, what are we reviewing as submerged aquatic vegetation when we consider lease applications, as well as aquaculture activities that are authorized by regulation on leases? And so what we did is, this was, Dr. Wesson was still with us back then. He put together a subcommittee of folks from the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee, and we met on three occasions over the last year to work on what we have considered criteria for defining SAV beds. And that is in your packet, is the criteria we've come up with. But to set the stage for this, I would really like to go through and just give you a little background on the regulations that involve SAV here at the Commission, a little bit about the law, state code that involves SAV that we deal with, and a little bit about our guidelines and our policies that got us to this point, and then go through a little bit in detail maybe the criteria that we've established for defining what a bed would be and how we'll deal with permit situations where beds might be involved, or lease situations where SAV beds might be involved. So we have several regulations on the books here at the Commission listed here that deal with aquaculture structures, protective enclosures for aquaculture structures, and dredging submerged aquatic vegetation. That happens to be a Chincoteague Bay area over on the eastern shore. And the two regulations regarding structures and enclosures, they preclude structures in SAV. It allows something to occur on a lease, but you can't put a structure on SAV. So the issue has become, well, where's the boundary of the SAV and what really qualifies as SAV to limit use of that regulation? With regard to the laws that we deal with, 28.212.05 of the code, that's the code section that directs the commission and staff on what to look at when we issue permits for use of state submerged lands. And one of the major criteria it establishes is consideration of submerged aquatic vegetation when making those permit decisions. And within our subaqueous guidelines that we have developed to sort of tell the public how we're going to review applications and what the perspective will be of the commission in terms of certain issues, we've listed SAV in there, and you can see here that we note that if SAV is impacted by a project, that mitigation and compensation need to be considered. In addition, 28.2.1204.1 requires the commission to establish criteria for defining beds and areas where SAV might be established in the future. In the past, when this code section was established, we really were looking to the Bay Program information, the monitoring that was done by VIMS on an annual or yearly basis, and the fact that the Bay Program at the time had established areas of goal, or established a goal, and they identified areas where SAV had historically been. So we used the SAV current year information on coverage and that long-term goal and the areas where SAV had been historically sort of as our criteria. But we found, I think, which prompted the request by the commission to look at this, that that information's always not the best information. That as SAV fluctuates recently due to temperature changes and sediment type and other issues, that just looking at 1 year is not always good, and that looking at the Bay Program goal and where SAV was historically for restoration opportunities was probably casting a little bit too broad of a blanket, because there were areas where SAV is not likely to be, and we wouldn't want to preclude certain activities as a result. So, there's one other thing I wanted to show up here was our SAV policy with regard to leasing. It had been staff's position that we would not recommend leasing where SAV existed, and if we couldn't reconfigure the lease request around the SAV or avoid the SAV and issue the lease administratively, we would come to you because the applicant wanted to lease the area where SAV was. We'd recommend that it not be leased, but it was up to the commission to make that decision. But again, there was always a bit of a debate, well, what is the SAV? Where's the boundary? Where does it start? Where does it stop? And lastly, just want to point out and remind everyone that as a result of the Chesapeake Bay Agreement, the last updated version in 2014, the state committed to the protection of SAV and the restoration of SAV in the watershed. In Virginia, the target is really 77,500 acres of SAV. That's 185,000 acres in the Bay watershed, but 77,500 of that is in Virginia. And I think we're in the 30, halfway there with regard to what's SAV in Virginia's portion of the Bay now in terms of acreage. So you put all this together, you know, I would say that it means the commission has an obligation to protect SAV resources in the Bay watershed. I wanted to put a couple maps in here just to give you a perspective on what we're looking at. This is a 2010 layer. When the 2010 goal was established for the 185,000 acres, we mapped or used the VIMS data to show on the maps we put online what the SAV coverage was at that time. So this is, if you look at our online maps now, you'll see this graphic, and that's a 2010 coverage is what it happened to be. That was the data at the time. So it's just one year. This is just for location purposes. This is the Mobjack Bay in Matthews County, just an area I picked to show you an example. If you added to that the 185,000-acre goal area or the historic coverage documentation, this is what it would have looked like. If you look at the last year of monitoring, I think this is the 2016 map for the same area. It shows what VIMS mapped during the 2016 year. Not a whole lot different than that 2010 map you just saw, but this is it. If we add to that a five-year sort of coverage, if it had been any one of 5 years for the last 5 years, there's a green line in there. You can sort of see it there. Comes around a little bit more down here. That's what would have been covered over at least 1 year out of the previous five. And if you color that in, this is what the map looks like. And if you do 10 years, then it changes a little bit more. It was really easy to see what it went to, but it expanded just slightly for 10 years. And I've shown those two maps because as we get into discussion of what the committee agreed was an appropriate definition for a bid, for an existing bid, it would be at least coverage in 1 year of the last 5 years, and for areas where we have the potential for SAV, is coverage in at least 1 year for the last 10 years. So here are the criteria for defining SAV bids. And as I just mentioned, it would be 1 year of the previous five would be what would define an SAV bid. And based on our meetings and conversations with them and listening to their advice, the 5 year was picked because we have in the fluctuations. It changes from time to time. It recognizes the persistence of some of these areas. But also, there are times when we might lose a bed due to heat stress or some other weather change, and it sometimes is taking about 5 years for that particular bed to recover. So that's part of the background from the VIMS perspective for choosing 5 years. They might have more to say about that, but that's a general characterization. With regard to where it's going to be in the future, as I mentioned earlier, the areas based on the 185,000-acre sort of coverage criteria based on where it has always been historically or ever been historically seemed to have been so much coverage that we would have been limiting uses with not a real good reason or not a real good expectation in some cases of SAV coming back. So we thought that was probably too much area to cover for potential restoration, and we thought the 5-year or the 10-year period would be a more appropriate period. So really what we're saying in this guidance is that let's pick those two criteria for establishing a bid and defining where a bid will be or potentially be. But we've also recognized that we need to establish some coordination procedures and talk about, you know, when we could possibly permit something in an area that contain SAV, possibly some of these what we'll call less dense areas of SAV. And what we've recognized is that we'll still avoid permitting in what we'll call an SAV bid. That will be our approach. But that if there is an activity proposed that involves a bed of SAV, it could be permitted, but that we would have to do some mitigation, much like our mitigation compensation policy, I mean our subaqueous guidelines previously articulated. But with regard to aquaculture structures, I think this was, since we put this in the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee work group, we were focusing a lot, as you can well imagine, on aquaculture operations and how we could deal with those. And what we, you know, have now is that we have the regulations that preclude SAV or preclude structures where there is SAV. Now, if we have our criteria defining the beds, it's mapped, and we can use those maps to define what the boundaries would be. But there are some instances where we might have not very dense coverage, where we might be able to put some aquaculture structures, and we might have some, you know, beneficial uses on both sides. You get some aquaculture operation in there. There's some suggestions that it might help with SAV recruitment. On the other hand, we don't want to preclude all of the SAV from coming back or covering areas that might be SAV in a not so dense area. And so what we think we can do is use the permit process in those situations. You would not qualify for, an individual would not qualify for use of the regulation to allow the cage without a permit, but we could go through the permit process to allow structures where there might be some SAV in a given area where it's mapped. But we would also be considering mitigation requirements, like what the spacing of the cages might be, how you access the cages to preclude prop scarring of the SAV, or just how the workers might get in there to work the cages, as an example. And there might be some need for some type of compensation, be it transplanting SAV or supporting some seeding operations in a bed nearby, or some other out-of-kind compensation that might help support SAV restoration overall in the bay. We haven't articulated what all those would be in this guidance, but those are just some examples, I think, of what we would consider in a case-by-case basis. I would say that as part of this, we would plan to put the bed that were defined, that were identified by VIMS once at the last 5 years, for 5 years, on our oyster ground mapping information so that people could go online and see that. So we would update that each year as additional survey work was completed and the areas were mapped. So that would give the aquaculture shellfish growers and the general public who are seeking permits a good idea of what we're calling an SAV bed. And lastly, we recognize that there are cages and structures that were put in place before SAV management became such a big issue or before there was SAV there. And we're saying that you can continue to operate that structure or manage those cages in that particular area where there is SAV, and you can continue to take cages out and put them back, but you couldn't expand your cage operation to the SAV that's in the area around the cages. So basically, that's the criteria we came up with. We did several straw men for the committee, and they endorsed what we will call was option two at the time, and that's what's before you. There's a couple things I do want to point out as I went through here that this section of the guidance, this paragraph here talked about aquaculture and SAV and what was allowed, what wasn't allowed. We presented this to the committee. They thought this was all right, but after we got back here at the staff level, Ben Stagg provided the second draft for me, and we thought this was a better language for articulating that particular aspect of how we deal with the regulations that allow on-bottom cages and when we'll allow, when we'll require permits. So I would ask that you endorse that alternative text there. And secondly, lastly, you'll see some italics up there in that first line where we identified what is a SAV bed at least one of the previous 5 years. But then we also added, I've added this, such bed shall be considered a stand of SAV. That's a, that stand, that word stand of SAV is the terminology that appears in the regulation for on-bottom use for the 12-inch cages. We had talked about this in the committee, but we never went back to it to sort of ensure that that got recognized as part of this current criteria or guidance. So what we're trying to say here is that where it says stand of SAV in the regulation, that that's the same as what a bed would be. So there's not different terminology from one regulation to the next. So with that, I would, you know, ask the commission to consider accepting this as our guidelines and criteria, and we would move forward using this in the future for our management decisions relative to SAV beds.
We can double back with Tony, but we have Dr. Wirth with us here today. Dr. Wirth, you have anything to add? You are the SAV expert in Virginia.
Thank you for allowing me to speak, but I think Mr. Watkinson has done an excellent job in giving you a summary of what transpired at these three meetings. I think there was a lot of give and take, a lot of compromising going on, and I think this is just a continuation of the effort that we've had with the MRC and the aquaculture industry to understand the needs of both groups. I don't think this is the end. I think we'll be seeing some continuing interactions among all these three groups as we try to better understand the needs of both. Again, we have to also realize that, again, from the Virginia DEQ component, there is a water quality component to this, and we have to recognize that they're also as a part of this. But Mr. Watkinson did a great job, and I thought the committee worked really well. It was a very good group of people. The interaction was very good, very level-headed, and not a lot of, I think, was good interaction with people. I enjoyed working with the aquaculture people, and I think we came up with a good compromise. At least that's the way I interpret it. Right.
Questions from the commission?
I guess I have a question. These guidelines call for, in very large part, the continuation of the SAV monitoring by VIMS.
Correct.
Which would require a continuation of funding for that project.
Correct.
Does that seem sound?
I wish I could give you a solid answer. I can't, because our funding does come from the federal government through the Chesapeake Bay program. The FY18 budget presented by the president is obviously under consideration. If we look at what happened with the FY17 budget, there was considerable support for continuing the Bay program, as it's currently funded, but there are other science programs that fund us. So, you know, we just have to wait and see. We have the money for this year. What happens at FY18, obviously, you know, we'll all be watching very carefully, as many groups will be, for what happens in the next few months.
Okay, thank you.
But, yeah, we're hoping that this will continue. If it doesn't, it does create an issue, because the maps that we provide are all based on the imagery that we collect, as we're collecting right now, to provide maps for the current year. And because things are changing very radically every year, as you've heard some people talk about, the expansion of widget grass in some areas is something that we need to watch very carefully, because that one species has been changing quite a bit over the last few years. And there are places that some people said they've never seen SAV before, they now have it. So this is a new normal time, or abnormal time.
No, it's the new normal.
The new normal, right.
Other questions to the commission? Thank you, sir. This isn't a public hearing, but in the interest of open and transparent government, is there anybody in the audience that wishes to comment on this draft guideline? Mr. Esselink.
Okay.
Thank you.
Certainly.
I understand this is not a public hearing or anything.
Please state your name for the record.
Michael Osterling, Executive Director of Shellfish Growers of Virginia. And I want to first commend Habitat Management staff and our friends at VIMS for being sensitive to industry's concerns. Ecosystem services. Everyone talks about the wonderful ecosystem services that we get from SAV, and we don't deny it. But everything that we love about SAV ecosystem services can be said about shellfish aquaculture. We provide habitat for juvenile fish and shellfish. We provide water quality services in removing excess nutrients. We help stabilize the bottom. So when you start determining mitigation and compensation, please consider that a lot of times aquaculture is an equal ecosystem equivalent to SAV. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else in the audience wish to be heard on this matter? All right. Well, the public hearing that wasn't a public hearing is no longer a public hearing. So it's up to the commission. What do you all want to do with this? Any comments, discussions? Mr. Ballard?
I'll just echo what everyone has said so far. I think it's clear from all commission meetings we've had that shellfish growers are feeling squeezed on either side, whether it's the upland property owners, the recreational users of the water, and the SAV. We're all just trying to balance conflicts, and this is another conflict that shellfish growers have faced. VIM staff was exceptional at educating us and working with us. I think there was a lot of frustration on growers' parts of they would apply for a lease and it would be denied because they saw one blade of grass, and they're sitting here saying we can make sustainable shellfish aquaculture in this area, and we saw one blade of grass. Why in the world are we preserving 20 acres for one blade of grass? And VIMS did a great job educating everyone on the fact that it can take 5 to 10 years for a bed to recover, and we can't just put structures over that. You know, I think, as always, aquaculturists would like to see much, much more, but this is a good start of allowing permitting for maybe those occasions where we do see one blade of grass, and we can work with the commission and VIMS to say, let's space out cages or do some other measures to come up with a good circumstance. So I'm not sure if we're voting on this or just discussing, but I would move to approve if we're voting on it.
Yeah, I think that we are in that posture. If we're going to adopt these or as our guidelines, we need to adopt them.
And so, I second that.
So it's a motion by Mr. Ballard, second by Mr. Monard, to adopt the guidelines as proposed, as drafted. Is there further discussion on the matter? Mr. Neal?
I had one other question, I guess, for Tony. What are the current guidelines now for, let's say, an aquaculture operation where grass does grow? Are they required to move it now? You know, these guidelines said they would not be required.
I think I'll answer that in sort of a couple parts. Okay. One, the regulation that allows all bottom culture aquaculture structures says it can't go whereas a dead or a stand of SAV. So if it were put out there and there were SAV in the area or it was put on SAV, it really would be a violation of the regulation. So we would have to work with the aquaculture grower, the shellfish grower, to move the cages, get out of the SAV. So that would be the policy with regard to cages on SAV beds now, or up until this point we adopt this guidance. And with regard to leasing, it's, you know, we look at what is the coverage out there. Is there SAV in the area? And it was our policy to recommend we not lease those areas where there was.
My question was more of, they've got the cages, there was no SAV.
Okay.
And then the SAV comes back. So SAV grows.
That was recognized as sort of that last bullet on the slide, that if right. SAV moves in around the operation, you can continue to operate where you are. You just can't expand your cages outside of where you were onto the SAV.
My question was, what are we doing with that? That's the new recommendation.
That's what we do now, too.
Okay, that's my question. All right, thank you. That was it.
Yeah, sorry.
Mr. Speaker, Tony, was your request for us to kind of approve this and then ask for a public hearing on this or not?
No, I think since this is a guidelines and how we would operate, that your acceptance of this would be all we need at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Further discussion? Well, we have a motion by Mr. Ballard and a second by Mr. Minor to adopt these guidelines as guidelines, official guidelines. I'll call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Chair votes aye as well. Motion passes unanimously, and now we have new SAV guidelines.